Fine. So what we're going to move to now is the question of Yerushat HaBen. As I sent out on the chat yesterday, my goal is the next two sugyot are Yerushat HaBen, right? Inheritance of sons, followed by inheritance of daughters. And then you tell me, at some point we should probably do at least like one or two days on like explaining how things work halacha l'maaseh nowadays, because we have all types of interesting mechanisms that we use specifically to allow daughters to inherit and things like, or functionally inherit. So how we got there. The source sheet I have prepared on it is meant for quite a wide audience because I gave it at a financial planning firm, which was mostly not Jewish, in Toronto, because they wanted this year, because they have Jewish clients and they wanted to understand what was going on, but they obviously have no background in Torah whatsoever. Rami is like trying to process this. So, yes, Rami, that was what I just said. Again, they actually dealt with financial planning for Jews, and therefore this was part of it, and they needed to understand what was going on.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. That's why they wanted it.
Oh, okay.
Right? I didn't realize that until I got there, right? Like, I thought that most of the people there were, the person who organized this year was a firm guy who davened at shul with me, right? But once I got there, I realized why it was, anyways. But at some point we can do that. Fine. So as we noted yesterday, right, that there are basically, and as I showed Yaakov this morning in the cheat book of the millennium, the Kovet Yesodos HaKiras, which is this monstrosity of a book that just gives like short summaries of every Lumdish question in all of Shas without having to do any of the hard work of, reading it. The classic Hakira in Yerusha is, to what extent do we conceptualize Yerusha as the grand, like the transition giving, bequeathing actively of property? And to what extent does Yerusha just happen by the Yoresh essentially taking the place of the Morish? Right? And therefore it just passes naturally. Right? The classic Lumdish formulation is Yerusha a ha'avara or a nitina, right, a giving or a transition, or does it function through mimale mikomo, through the Yoresh taking the place of the heir, of the bequeather, or if you want to think about it in very simple terms, does Yerusha work by the property passing down or by the Yoresh going up? Right? That's another just sort of very simplistic way of thinking it, right? Meaning, does the property go from the bequeather down to the inheritor, or does the inheritor become the bequeather and therefore just takes over the property? Right? Those are like different versions. Those are all the same. Those are all just different ways that people say essentially the same question. I don't think there's a fundamental difference between those. Right? Meaning there might be nuances. But those are all sort of versions of what we said yesterday, that in classic Lumdish terminology, you'll find all those formulations. Okay? But as we left with, I'll take your question in just one second, Ezra, we left with yesterday is the possibility that both of these are true depending on what type of heir you're talking about. Right? That's what we left yesterday?
Yes.
Yes? We're in agreement? Yes. Okay. Ezra. Potentially, yes. Well, potentially. Not quite. They don't, debts don't pass on, but they pass on, they do inherit in the property.
Right, so basically, like, the only, so if the debt is greater than the assets, then they can pass on, but vice versa.
Meaning they inherit in the property,
right?
Right? Meaning if someone inherits land, right? I mean, take a very simple case, right? If Reuven inherits a house from Yaakov, I don't have to explain to you that Reuven is Yaakov's son, right? This is like the classic way in the Rishonim. They just use the avod on the expectation that you know the basic contours of Brishon.
Like Reuven, Shimon, Levi on the line, but Yeah.
Right. So here they literally mean, let's say Reuven inherited a house from Yaakov. Very simple modern case. He inherits a house and it has a mortgage on it. Right. So, he can.
But were debts like tied to assets that they
want? Yes. Classically, land was tied. Yes. That's what I'm giving it. It's a very, very classic case in that sense.
What if it's like...
No, that's why I'm giving you a classic case. We can get to these later in the perek. We can get to it later in the perek. That's a sugya later on in blah blah blah. So the difference between, yes,
also,
with or without shibud.
It's first one is double portions. That means they get double the debt.
Meaning the portion is distributed equally. Yes, the debt is distributed equally in the property. Yes.
Equally in the property.
Right. Meaning because you don't have a personal obligation to pay it back, but the property still has a lien. Right. And mortgage is a good example because it's a property that inherently has a lien. Right? And that's why, yes, that obviously passes on because you inherit the property with the lien that's attached to it. Right? Personal debts are different. Right? And we'll see that. Right. Oh, I don't know if we'll see that. It is later in Bava Basra. Will we see it? That's a good question. The year is like, you know, shrinking. There's only a few weeks left to between, you know, whatever, you know. Whatever, on the plane to Dubai, I don't know. Okay, fine.
Do we know who the jury does that thing?
No, I have no idea. This is not my department. I think I've made that clear.
Maybe you should write your reply over here.
Thank you, Ali. Okay, so what I want to do is examine the nature of Yerusha HaBen, because the most likely place, if you're going to divide the natures of Yerusha, are with the son versus every other heir, and we'll see why that is the case, okay? You are correct. That's why I gave that as a separate topic.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I'm going to, for now, let's talk about sons. This is my logical...
I'm saying, like, it doesn't have anything to mention. I don't know.
No, you're right. I think that's exactly the point. But the logical organization of the next two shiurim is the Yerusha of sons different? And if it is that sons or is that children?
Right, because according to the last one we read yesterday, there's really not much difference if daughters get to
eat or... Oh, very good. And that's exactly the problem, is that there's going to be a lot of tension and contradictions in the Gemara, because I wrote this sheet last night for daughters. The first thing it says is, there will be a lot of review here, right? We will be re-examining sources that we already looked at, right? One of them, obviously, one of the first things I put on that sheet is the Gemara that Ellie correctly notes from Kuf Yutet, which is, if you just read Kuf Yutet in isolation, you would assume that whatever is true of sons is true of daughters from the Yibum case, right? And yet, there's a lot of evidence that's not the case, and that's what we have to figure out. But first, let's examine sons on their own terms. So, the most important thing in this context seems to be this Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Yud Zayin, where the Gemara deals with the question of whether servitude to a master is passed on to child of said master. Okay? Meaning, do you inherit the right to slaves or servants? Okay? So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbana, Eved Ivri, Oved et Habein, Ve'eno Oved et Habat. The Eved Ivri, if they're still within their 6 years of service, will continue their servitude to sons, but not to daughters. Right? So already in this Gemara, the line between different types of heirs seems to be sons versus everybody else. So we'll see whether that's true, but at least at first glance, that seems to be the case. Amma ivriya ina ovedet lo eraben velo erabat. But a female maidservant will neither continue her servitude to sons or daughters. Now this is talking about, now let's just do a little bit of chazara here. So, eved ivri, what are the halachot of eved ivri? How many years did they work?
Six.
Unless they choose not to leave, in which case they are near Tzah, right? They get their appearance by the door, and then they work until? Yovel. Very good. Amma Ivriya. What's the ideal way for the relationship of marriage? Yihud. Right? The ideal way for Amma Ivriya to end is marrying either the master or his son, Yihud. Right? Which we talked about. Right? She automatically goes free when? When she hits, right? When she hits physical maturity, exactly. Right? Meaning when she hits that stage, she automatically goes free.
Wait, not when she marries her son.
Meaning if she marries them, so that's the ideal way to end it. But if he doesn't do that, then she only remains enslaved during her childhood. Yes, it's the reverse of the modern, right? Only child labor.
Wait, or if the master does.
Oh, yes, meaning, or the master does. That's what Gemara's talking about here.
Right.
Yes.
Then we have to do Yehud before she becomes an adult. Like, it's not like, if you hit that point, then you have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. No. That's right, you have to do it in advance. Because you can marry a child, remember?
Okay.
I'm not encouraging it, Ezra. I should make that clear, because now I'm on record, right?
Oh, you're
recording? Yeah. Halachically, it is possible. Don't do it, thank you. Not just because it's illegal, though it is obviously highly illegal, Ezra.
Well, I wasn't telling
you. I know, but I just need to put this on record that I am not endorsing such a thing. Because obviously, someone will take the clip. Oh, Ezra married a child. No, I didn't say that. I mean, I guess I did say those words. That's not what I meant. Right?
You're not endorsing the clip.
What?
At least
I'm not endorsing it. I am not endorsing. I'm saying it would work. Unfortunately, it would work halachically, right? If you gave kesef kiddushin to the child of a minor, and he accepted it, kiddushin would, on a biblical level, be effective. It is a terrible, 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 terrible idea, and illegal. Okay. So the hanirtzah, right, the slave whose ear is pierced, v'anim karlo v'eko chavim, or the slave who's sold to a non-Jew, which you're not allowed to do, right, and then that slave has to go free, right, that's part of what has to happen, is you shouldn't have done that, and then you have to buy them back and free them.
But he does recognize the fact that they are
us. Yes, but it's usher, right, I mean you... Right, there are things in Allah, exactly, there are things that don't work, and obviously you need to end this situation, but they work.
Why do you think Margaret mentioned that he has to be set free regardless?
No, because you have to work to set him free, and just because you work to set him free doesn't mean you get him back.
But no, if you killed him and then you die, he gets set free.
That would be no. You have an obligation, right? You're not allowed to do this. And if you do this, you have to now buy him back. Right? Like we force you to pay as much money as it takes to get him back from the non-Jew to free him.
Right?
Right?
But this is the non-Jew guy, it doesn't get passed off?
No. What?
Is that so when it says that the Yashar level rate goes up in, you know, if it's a man, does that mean if the non-Jew dies, he doesn't serve the son of the non-Jew, or is it
No. Yeah. So then the Gemara says, we'll see what it means, right? We'll see what it means. But so Amar Mar. So the Gemara says, Eved Ivri Oved Ben Vein Oved Abat Minani Mili. How do you know that an Eved Ivri only continues to serve the son but not the daughter? Ditana Rabbanan, because it says Avatcha Sheishanim, he shall work for you for 6 years. Lecha Velo Liyorish. Now, someone parse those words for me. Lecha Velo Liyorish. What does that mean? You and not what?
Avdecha, not avde your heir.
Right, but what's the problem? This is the Gemara source for what? Thank you, Eli. Right? This is the Gemara source for saying that the Eved does serve the son. Right? So the Gemara says, Ata Omer Lechavelo Yoresh, O Eino El Lechavelo Leben. How do you know it's you and not your Yoresh? Maybe it's you and not your son. Now, someone explain that line to me.
The Pasuk specifically says, you serve you.
Correct, but Good. So the Gemara emphasizes the you, and it says you and not an heir. The Gemara says, how do you know it's not you and not an heir? Maybe it's you and not a son. What is the implication of this Gemara very strongly? Yes, right? A son is not a, at least, either not, he's not just an heir, right? He's more than that, right? Where does he fall? Somewhere between lecha and yoresh. He's somewhere between you and an heir, right? Meaning he's more you, right? Eli's future son will be more Eli than Eli's brother, but less Eli than Eli. Okay?
Yes.
Right? That's pretty clear. That's what the Gemara says, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know where
the son. I'm sorry. Who has a brother? Fine. Who wants? Fine. Yaakov's son will be more Yaakov than his brother. What's your brother's name? Pick one.
Ara.
What?
Ara.
And what's your future son's name, assuming your wife goes ahead with it? Pick a random name.
David.
Fine. David stricken will be less Yaakov stricken than Aaron stricken, will be less Yaakov than Yaakov, but more Yaakov than Aaron. Okay? Was that confusing enough? Fine? Don't worry, Ellie. I also don't have a brother. This would all be theoretical for me.
Okay.
You're in good company. Good company.
Right.
Your sisters?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Same. Sister, but fine. Wait, it's 11 o'clock, right? 11 o'clock. Yes?
Yes.
It's only 10:30. Shalom.
Hello.
Atami Masa?
What?
Okay.
Bechadasa,
okay?
Batina
Makoma Nafan? Okay. 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 Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
כן, אז אם אתה ממשיך הוא...
הוא שם?
כן.
אני אגיע אליו, תודה.
כן, בסוף, בצד ימין, הוא שם.
מאה אחוז, יהיה פה בסוף או בחדר אחר או פה?
אני נראה שזה יהיה בבית מדרש. כן, יש עכשיו כל השיעורים... יש אחד שקיים שם, אבל הוא שם גם. כן?
סליחה על
ההפרעה. אין בעיה. אוקיי, so... So then the Gemara says, "Kishu Omer Sheshanim Yaavod." When it says he shall work 6 years, Hare Leven Amor Hamanim Kayim Vavatcha Sheshanim Lechav Lo Yoreish. So now the Gemara says something shocking, and the Gemara says, "Okay, Mara Iti LeRabodet Aben LoHotzir Ach." Once you have this magical high status of Yerusha, why does the son get that status? Why does David stricken get that status and not Aaron stricken, right? Isn't our Yaakov and Aaron basically the same person? I honestly don't know. Are you? No, okay. I don't know. Right? Sometimes you have brothers that are like that. You know, it's like I feel like in the years that come, I will be able to use the example of my daughters because, like, identical twins are about as close as you get to saying they're the same person, you know? Yes. Yes, they are identical. But so the Gemara says Marbani and Aben she came Kam Takhanaviv Liya Da Uliste Achuza. So the Gemara says, because sons take the place of their fathers for Yi'ud and Stechuza, as we talked about already. Right? Adiraba Marbani and Akshakin Kam Takhanaviv Liyibum. Wait a second, don't we have a case? Wait, Ari, did he find you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. But why don't I include the brother? Because the brother takes the place for Yibum. And what's the Gemara's answer? Not surprisingly. Klum yesh Yibum, elu b'makom she'ena, and she'en bein. No. Yibum is the backup. Right? Yibum is backup for not having a son. Hayesh ben en Yibum. Ela time of Ikah Pircha, exactly like an Argamara. Wait, if they didn't have that Kasha Halava Yaakov, if they look like the Hakatar Tiva Chachada, he's in a 2-1. He says, no, Stechuzanami Ba'ar Pichu, the Kanafka Leila Tana, Klum Yeshiva Melamakam Shane Bain. So as Eli corrected noted, about half this Gemara is literally copied and pasted from our Gemara. Right? From what we did yesterday. Right? Like, this is the exact same argument. Is this a numbers game? No, it's not a numbers game. It's a fundamental principle. Right? But the main chiddush is the beginning half of the Gemara, which is a wild claim that a ben is not a yoresh. Right? The ben is not a yoresh. The ben is something else. And this is like the number one source for the belief that if we're going to divide between different types of Yerusha, the line is between son and other heirs. Meaning the Gemara does literally say a son is not an heir. Right? He's not a Yerush. Or more precisely, probably should be read, is not merely an heir. Right? Not merely a Yerush. Right? Are we in agreement that's like the simplest read of this Gemara? Right? Which is explicitly connected to our Gemara from yesterday. Right? That's really the difference between brothers and sons. That everything stems from the fact that brothers are and sons are fundamentally different. It's not just a numbers game. It reflects something fundamental. Now remind me again. Besides for the Gemara, where did we see this implication in the Pasuk? Right, where do we see this? Remember, we talked about this. Right, one was that in the parsha of Nachla never said, right, it never says your son inherits. It says if there isn't a son, then this is Seder Nachla, which implies that the laws of Nachla are not relevant, classically speaking, when there's a son, because that's obvious. Right, we already noted that in the main parsha of Nachla, this uniqueness of son is implied by the presentation of V'im Ein Lo Ben. If there is no son, so then you have to figure out Seder Nachalot. But if there is a son implication, no one needs to tell you that the son, whatever he does, right? I'm not going to say inherit, because that's exactly what Gemara says he doesn't really do, right? Similarly, in the Yibum case, the language is the same. V'im Ein Lo Ben. If he doesn't have a son, so then you need to do Yibum. Why? Lahakim Shem Lahachiv. To carry on his brother's name. Implication. If there is a son, that the son does more than just inherit. The son is make him shame. He is the one who carries on the name. Right? It's not just that he's an heir. He's something else. Right, and this is where all the Lamdanim come up with this formulation of Mimalei Mikomo. Right, we saw that the Chinuch said in the context of Yibum yesterday. Right, this idea that a son is more than inherit, he takes the place of his father. Right, and again, using the vertical imagery, it's not the property goes down, it's that the son, right, goes up. Right, he takes the place as patriarch, right, as father, right, he fills his father's shoes. Literally. Right? Okay. The Torah Tmimah basically makes this point in how he reads the Pasuk and reads the Drasha. So if you look at 3, this is just, I think, a nice succinct formulation. He says, V'yesh lahair. This was the diuk that we just read. Right? This was our starting question 4 days ago in the Pesukim, which is, Lama loktiv v'feirush. Why does the Torah not say explicitly, Ish kiyamut unitatem edachalato livna? Why does the Torah never say, when somebody dies, give the property to his son? Why doesn't it say that? So what does he answer? V'nir'eh, it seems, mishum d'yerushat haben en aviv, the inheritance of a son, that which a son inherits his father, heve kedavar haba b'teva. It's something that comes, what's bateva? By nature. Shaben kam tachraviv. A son stands in the place of his father. V'ein sorech lashminam zeh. You don't even have to tell me that. V'gamein sorech letzavoro kim davar hatavua kimo bateva shal shalet chayei ha'adam. There's no need to command about things that are inherent in nature, inherent in the chain of people. Mipnei Shahaben who bone Beit Aviv. The son is the one who builds his father's house, his legacy. Asher al kein nikra zachar b'shem Bain. He said that's why sons are called Ben. Milashon binyan. Because they are those that build. Thank you, very good. That's exactly what it is. V'chein amrinon, and that's the language of the Gemara in several places. Bra kara de'avua. What does that mean? A son is like part of your body. It's like your thigh, right? He's part of your body.
No.
V'chein amrinon bababadra kofnem aleph. Kol she'eno miniach ben liyarsho. And that's why the Gemara later on in an Agadic statement says that if you don't leave a son to inherit you, God, it's as if, it's proof that, whatever, God is angry at you. Why? Peter's Rashbam, the Rashbam says, because there's nobody whose name, right, think about it. You might think it's sexist, but, and maybe it is, right, I don't know, but the fact that right, people like having sons because they carry on their last name, right? Their last name.
I don't know.
And look, like it or not, this is something that's natural. Now, does that lead to terrible situations sometimes? Me'achuz. And as we all know, what is the greatest eugenic travesty of the 20th and 21st century? What? Eugenics. Do you know what eugenics are? Yes, it's like playing with genes, right, towards the perfection. Yes. Right? What is the greatest numerically, right? Simply numerically even, what is the greatest eugenic travesty? No, you would think that's the worst, but it's actually not. China, thank you. It's China's one, it's the result of China's one child policy where if you're only going to get one child, what do they want?
A boy.
A boy. And therefore we know that there were countless abortions, murders, right, abandonments of girls. And therefore, the difference between the number of male children that were born during the one-child policy and the number of girls is in the tens of millions, right? I don't know if you've ever followed this. It's horrible, right? And the results are insane. Besides for the inevitable collapse of, you know, much of the economic system when, you know, one boy is going to have to take care of his parents and grandparents. We know that. It's a problem. But I don't even mean that. I mean that, right, the obvious problems are now appearing in China, like...
Yes, thank you.
A giant shidduch crisis. That's a nice way of putting it. Yes, a giant shidduch crisis, except it's really hard to plug a gap of tens of millions of people who were never born or never allowed to survive past infancy in favor of this. And therefore, it has led to even more terrible things like kidnapping and enslavement of women from surrounding countries that are smuggled in to be the wives of these people. And that number is apparently in the tens of thousands or more, hundreds of thousands, right? From like places like, I always forget which one it is now, Burma or Myanmar, whichever one it is now.
Myanmar.
What? It's Myanmar now? Okay. I don't know which one is the old one, which is the new one. But, and it's created a very distasteful explosion in the industry of sex robots, and, like, it's created serious problems in the country. I didn't really put it this way, but when I just finished this book on the gene, but they're like, yes, this is the, right, people don't, right, simply numerically speaking, this was the greatest eugenic experiment, right, numerically, of the 20th century, right, because, right, as much as, obviously there were terrible things in the Holocaust, right, but between the aborting and, you know, infanticide, right, it affected at least tens of millions of people, right? Yeah, it was pretty bad, right? So that's like the really sort of scary side of it, but the fact that people feel like the ones who are going to carry on their legacy is the male, it's not untrue that that is, right, that most people really do feel that way, right? Letover Lara, often Lara, but yes. So therefore he says, וכן ברדרד מאמין שניהם איש יקרא שם המת על נחל אדום וכדומה מאמר הם שונים ולכן לא שייך לומר איש כי אמון ונצאתם או והברתם הנחל אותו לבנו. And therefore you can't really say give the property to the son, pass it on to the son. יען כי לא שייך נתינה על דבר הבא בחיוב מוטבע בחיים העולם. You don't say you give something when the reason the son gets it is because this is inherent in the nature of the world, generally. And then he says, "Im svara zo, with that svara, nir'eh lav yismilchin l'mashkadav haran, reish perek tetik tubot." He can explain halachic things, like the Ran statement, "D'lo mahani kol siluk v'kinyin l'saleg et atmom yirusha." There's nothing you can do to prevent yourself from inheriting. You can't say, "I don't want to inherit." It comes to you. What you do with it afterwards, not our problem. Right? But you get it first, right? This was I don't know if I told you this, but this was a big, very bizarre legal fight in Canada, in Toronto, right? There is a nafkamina, because you'll tell me, what's the nafkamina, whether I inherit and then give it away, or I don't inherit? What's the nafkamina?
Taxes.
Yes, the modern equivalent of it is taxes, right? So the very, very, very public example in Toronto was where there was a very wealthy individual who learned with one of the Chabad rabbis in Toronto on a regular basis. And when he died, he left him $60 million to him personally. And he got into a fight with the CRA. What was the fight with the CRA? So he said, before the Rebbe died, I promised to the Rebbe that any donation that was made to me is automatically a donation to the shul, to Chabad, whatever it was, right? And therefore, it should be viewed as a donation directly to charity and therefore not taxable. And the CRA said, You are free to give it away to charity, but first we're taking our $24 million chunk of this inheritance, right? And this is a big legal fight, right? Because there actually are not giving this to this question of whether you inherit and then give away or whether you do not inherit, right? So the Ram says there's nothing you can do. You can't just not inherit. That's not how it works. And he says, Shekein tachat av v'tai, I just skipped back. But then he says, but there might be a difference between what? The inheritance of the son and other heirs. Why? Because if everybody else, Yerusha, is conceptualized as a passing on of property, so it could be that you could stop that by saying, don't pass it on to me. But the Ben doesn't inherit the property. He fills his father's place, and therefore implicitly, right, or automatically becomes the owner of that property, right, of those properties. So he says maybe a brother would be allowed, right, basically, to take the CRA case, a son would not be able to say, I didn't inherit, right? And therefore, if it was a son, the CRA would win, right? Because he'd say, you inherited it. There's nothing you can do about inheriting. Nothing you're going to say is going to stop that inheritance. What you choose to do with it later is your business, but first we take our chunk. CRA, if you didn't figure out, it's the same as the IRS in Canada, if you didn't figure that one out. Right? But another heir, halachically, would be able to say, not true, because I promised to the Rebbe that anything that came to me would automatically go. That protest makes it that it goes automatically to the shul. Right? That would be enough, Kamina. So he says, "Shetzarich lechalek ben siluk Yerusha ben of Nezirato balo b'teva." You have to distinguish. A son's inheritance comes automatically, naturally, and therefore he can't get out of it. Uvein siluk shari Yerushim, as opposed to other heirs. Shibahem nikra Yerushatam mein matana. For other heirs, it doesn't happen automatically. It's as if it was a gift. To what is proof, and this we already noted in the Pesukim. Remember I said, pay attention to the Pesukim to different verbs? When it comes to other Yarshim, it uses the word unitatem. You shall give, which implies that it's not automatic. There is a process of giving. Uraya lezemi ma'azekaimelon b'v'chor shi'acholim chol chelik b'chorah shalom mishin d'chelik zem matanah karech money. He said similarly, and we'll get to this, that by the case of firstborns, the double portion, a bechor can stop, because the Torah calls that a matana, unitatem. So the first portion that the bechor gets as a son, he cannot alienate himself from. But the second portion, he can, because it's a matana. V'chein kazu v'sefer, something. B'shem Yonizim v'ryosef ha-levi, lomati inish lomar eni yorej v'ino pre'achov avi, and that's why a son can't say, going back to Ezra's point before, a son is not allowed to say, I refuse to inherit so that I don't have to pay off my father's loans from the property. A son has no choice. He inherits the property with the loans, and he has to deal with it. Another heir could say, I don't want it, right? I don't want to deal with the creditors. I will just leave it in the family trust and let them fight with the trust lawyers. Right? But a son can't do that. Right? So the Torah Tamima basically notes our diok in the Pasuk and says that what emerges in that diok in the Pasuk, that a son, it almost sounds like it's a given. It never says unisatem, that you give to him. What he derives from here is that the inheritance of a son is fundamentally different. Bye, cat. Thank you. That the inheritance of sons is not a passage of property. It's a filling of place. And therefore is inalienable. Right? And as opposed to other Yerushim, where it is a transfer of property and therefore alienable. Right? And again, in our Gemara, in the Gemara in Kiddushin, this is a simple implication. Because a son is specifically called not a Yorish, right? He's closer to you, and therefore, even though the Eved Ivri should only serve you, not that I'm implying that any of you have slaves, okay? The Eved Ivri is serving someone who has a slave, right? His son can take over the masterness, I don't know how to pronounce, I don't even know what that would be, being the master of the slave, but other heirs cannot, because they are other, rather than the son, who's not really an other. Yes? Is that clear? Good. Okay. So I wasn't sure if this would take us 1 or 2 days. Apparently the answer to that question is 2 days, because I do want to give you a break before this Masa presentation. I don't know whether what's left in the sheet will take a whole nother day. But basically, just to give you the heads up, what's left on the sheet is, if this distinction is true, so the Torah Tamim already mentioned some of the differences, right? Can you alienate yourself before, or does it come to you automatically? But there are other nafkaminas, and the nafkaminas that you'll see here are, basically, does this apply to things that are not monetary inheritance? Right? So, for example, we will see the case of status, right? Communal leadership roles. Are those inheritable? And if so, to all heirs or only to sons? And we'll see a discussion in the Meiri about the possible differences between Jewish and non-Jewish inheritance according to Torah law. Right? How much of Torah law, this is going back to Ezra's point yesterday from right, is how much of Jewish law and how much of non-Jewish law of dinim is similar to Jewish law, and it might be similar for sons, but not similar for others, right? Because if one of those is natural, then you would expect that it would be true in all legal systems, right, from the vantage point of halakha, as opposed to the ones which are, right, Torah law, which might only apply when the Torah actually stated it, right? So that's going to be another thing, right? Those are the nafkaminas that we're going to explore. If you finish all of this and we finish it, so then we will transition to the daughter case and figure out, well, if this is really true about sons, is it also true of daughters or not? Okay? Good?